This is 4D with Demi Lovato. Today on the show, my friend and creative collaborator, the musical sensation JoJo. Her story is one of resilience, talent, and originality. It's the definition of a comeback story. Hang out with us here in just a minute.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Woo, your eyeshadow is popping.
Oh, thank you. Gorgeous. You look so good.
Thank you.
So gorgeous. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and doing this podcast. I'm so excited to talk to you because obviously I love you dearly as a friend, but I've also been a huge fan for since I can remember. So I am so excited to have you. Basically, I want to have conversations on this podcast that are going to hopefully elevate humanity into the next dimension.
What a legacy. That's incredible. What you know, for real. I was watching your conversation with Drew Barrymore, and I love it. You're getting right to the heart of things. And
oh, thank you.
Life is all about connections. So I just like that you're bringing this into your, you know, putting this out there as well.
Well, thank you. I do want to give you a chance to introduce yourself.
My name is Joanna, and I am from New England. I am a lover. I'm someone who loves to connect people. I have had a very colorful and amazing career. I've had a really great experience so far since I put out my first album when I was 13. And I now at 30, it's so crazy to be talking about this 17-year career that I've had so far.
Yeah.
So I'm a person who believes in resilience, who believes in people and potential and growth. Yeah, I'm a singer, songwriter. I've done some acting. But more than anything, I really love to connect with people. So that's why I was particularly excited to do this with you.
Well, thank you. A lot of my fans, they love the song that we did together.
And Lonely Hearts.
And I still blare that. It is so good. I'm like, I still bump it in the car. And a part of me too is like, it always somehow transitions from like me and my friends listening to the songs that you sang when we were growing up and then transitioning to your newer stuff. And then I'm like, wait, we have to play it. And then we play it.
I love it. I want to be in that car singing along with our song.
Oh my gosh, so absolutely. We have to. Well, I wanted to talk to you because you have had quite the journey. You talk about how grateful and how you've had such an incredible experience in your career. But I do know that you've had some difficult times, and I wanted to talk to you a bit about that because I think it's important that people know what women in the industry and what women in general have to deal with, but especially women in the pop industry have to deal with.
I was just touching on this very topic with another friend earlier today, and we were sharing experiences with each other that we had never shared before, even though we had known each other, you know, to a certain extent, just through the industry and working together and stuff like that. And we realized that we had a lot of parallels in our experiences with managers or executives or mm-hmm. people who have really helped, for better or worse, shape our sense of self or how we perceived our self-worth. And like, even just, I was realizing that I was so self-conscious about what somebody in my life that was working with me thought about what I was eating, that I never ordered what I wanted to eat when I went out because I just knew that they would be like, oh, I can't believe she ate that before the night of a video shoot. I knew I'd hear about it gossipy around me the next day. And then I'd feel like, okay, well now I'm bloated and they can tell that I had too much sodium. I know this sounds ridiculous, but I also know you understand because all of us have been through that, especially if we started, you know, years ago, because I think that there's less and less room for that now. I think that the generation that's coming up is not tolerating that. I think yes. that if they're, and I love God. That spirit. Thank God that that's not what's happening. But I really felt dictated to, and I really felt like I was kind of under the thumb. I felt like a little girl who I wasn't able to really grow into. How do I feel comfortable? I don't care who you think I should be dating. Who do I love? Like what, how do I want to express myself through my personal style, through musical choices, all these things? I gave too much energy to the opinions of a select few people who I just allowed them to tell me who I was supposed to be, because defining yourself is scary.
Yes.
You know, it feels risky.
Yeah, I think, and there's also something to be said about how young you were when you came into the industry. And yeah. and same for me, you know, I started on Barney and Friends. So, you know, when I say I've been in this a long time too, it's granted it started with a dinosaur, but
I love dinosaurs. I have a dinosaur tattoo, and Barney was from childhood. So thank you. I stand. I can't.
Oh my God. Yeah, of course. Oh no. But yeah, it was just like, I look back and I think we didn't really have opportunities to bloom into the young, well, when I identified as a woman, a young woman, you know, I didn't have that opportunity to bloom into that because there were so many people telling us how to live, you know?
Yeah. Out of their own fear or understanding of what a pop star is supposed to be, what a woman is supposed to be, especially the pressures of like, I'm not saying there are no pressures now. Of course there are.
Of course.
In the early 2000s, there was a specific look. I know you know what it is because I remember being told about what other girls were doing to be slim. And it was like, yes. well, they're working out 4 times a day and they're on this diet pill and they're doing that. So why aren't you doing that? Like, do you want to compete? Mm-hmm. And it was that when I think about it, I'm like, it didn't even give my impressionable self the chance to just, like you said, develop. Mm-hmm. And just to go through the process of growing and maturing. I was put on like a very restrictive calorie diet at 18 because I was transitioning into the adult JoJo. So like there was an expectation that now I'd compete with, you know, a different group of girls. Even the spirit of competition is so negative and counterproductive. Mm-hmm. And I was injecting myself with these hormones or whatever it was I was given by this nutritionist. And it took me years to reclaim my relationship with food or my body. And, you know, yeah, it just made me feel more self-conscious than I should have.
Absolutely. What are ways that you have found either today or in this journey of reclaiming your body, your relationship with food? What are ways that you've been able to do that or tips or tricks that have made it, I guess, easier for you to have a healthier relationship with food and exercise today?
I don't know if it's, I mean, these would be my personal, what is working for me. And it's I am on a roller coaster, a sliding scale of how I feel about myself, how I relate to the world, how, you know, all these things. And for me, I started to understand the benefit that I reap from sweating, from feeling strong, from having a mind-body connection. And I really was like, I want these free drugs that my body creates when I'm exerting myself. I was like, I want more of that. Mm-hmm. And I find that when I'm consistent with it and when I'm like outside or I'm working out or I'm just playing or dancing or moving my body and, you know, yoga, whatever it is, I feel better. So, and that has nothing to do with trying to achieve a result. It was always results oriented when I was put with a trainer when I was a teenager or earlier in my 20s. And it was like, you have to do this. You have to get ready for this.
Yeah.
And now I'm more interested in routines and pleasure and balance, enjoyment, and knowing that this is the one body that I have. So I would like that to work for me. So I need to take care of it and engage with it. And we're so lucky to be able-bodied that I think about that a lot. I'm like, my body can do all these things. I would like to flex. I'd like to try.
Yeah.
So I got more curious and less result driven. And then I started to enjoy that more. But I would like to ask you the same question. Like I know it's been a journey for you. So what works for you?
Well, thank you. It's still a journey. And you know, what was funny is I had a guest on my podcast, Glennon Doyle, and we were talking about body image. And We were talking. I think I had said, she said, like, how is your relationship with recovery today? And I said, you know, I don't really deal with negative thoughts anymore. And my relationship with food and exercise has become a lot healthier. And then, bam, just like that, I went through a period of time where I bought a scale. I was struggling. And and I think that it was a period of time where I needed to learn that this doesn't work for me again. And so, and
sometimes we need to learn those same things a few times, bang our head against the wall. Like, I can't have a scale. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work for me. It makes me feel really, it sends me into a bad thing. And I've had to learn that several times as well.
Yeah. And me too. And so now it's still in my house. I haven't been able to get rid of it because it is such a crutch, but I don't step on it. So like, I'm making progress, but it's not there yet. And it's like, I had to have an experience where I was able to see that this doesn't work for me anymore. And I think it was because I felt invincible. Like, I was in a place where I was like, oh no, I'm good, I'm recovered. And then I went through something kind of like in the media, and it spun me back into that spiral. Mm. And so it's like, I don't know if there's certain things that exactly like you said, I don't know if there's certain things that necessarily change the game for me. It's just like, it's realized sometimes I just kind of have to listen to my body. Yesterday I woke up and I had a thought where I was like, I would love to break a sweat today. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to like think too
that
much
would
about
feel good.
It.
Yes. That would bring me joy.
Yes.
That'd be dope.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of my favorite things is getting on the treadmill and just singing my little heart out, because it gets my lungs in good shape. You know, it's helpful to my voice and it passes the time. So yeah. I just sing, and it's finding things that are fun for you. Like you said, getting in nature, things like that.
And to your point, when you were like, I was flying high, I was feeling so good. I was like, I'm recovered, I'm in a great place. I think that, I mean, ego has two sides to it, and it can make us feel like nothing. And then it can make us feel like the biggest, baddest bitch on the planet.
Yeah.
And I have to sometimes bring myself like to a middle ground where I'm like, you're neither of those things are true.
Right.
And just check in, because I have a tendency to sometimes have that same, it's ego. And that contributes to my depression and anxiety and things that I've experienced. But I have to remind myself that it's not the truth.
So. Yeah. Ego, a term that I always heard for ego is edging God out.
I love that.
Can you talk about the Free JoJo movement? Because I thought it was so impactful that your fans took it upon themselves to start this movement. Can you tell the story a little bit?
Yeah.
Stuck under your label. They weren't letting you release music.
I signed my first record deal when I was 12, and everything was great. I had a lot of success with them with my first two albums, and it felt like a family. And these were my uncle figures, father figures, brothers, and they were extremely influential in my life and me as a young person. And unfortunately, I got caught up in some things that they were caught up with, and they were no longer a functioning record label, but wouldn't let me out of my contract. So I didn't own my voice contractually, and I wasn't able to put out music in the way that I had been putting it out, you know, through the official channels of doing things and radio and that whole thing. So I sued them for the first time at 18 to try to get the rights to my voice back and just get out of this contract so I could either be independent or sign another deal. And I was told that this contract was ironclad, that I'd never get out, that I should figure out another career. At that time, you know, my family was like, Joe, you're a very smart girl. Just go to college and pursue something else, because you cannot get out of this. Like, this is ironclad. And I was deeply depressed. That was my first time experiencing depression that I thought was just circumstantial. And I was like, okay, I'll overcome this and I'll be okay. And I started coping in different ways, you know, drinking to excess and hanging out with people that were not right for me and partying. And anyway, just touching on that, then a few years later, I did find these set of lawyers that agreed to help find a loophole. They found one. And it was that you can't hold a minor to a personal service contract for longer than 7 years. The statute was up, and I was able to get out on that. And my fans during that time, I was able to connect with them via social media. That's when Twitter was really starting to be the thing. And I think Instagram was as well, but I was like always tweeting with people and staying connected that way. And even through YouTube. And I would put up little singing videos, or I would tell them a little bit about what I was going through. And I think they started to catch wind. I think some articles had been written, like on Billboard, talking about the plight, my contract thing. And they started like this hashtag Free JoJo. And I really did feel like I was this caged bird, that I was like, okay, all my peers are able to play and flourish and do their thing. And I felt embarrassed. I felt ashamed. I felt really confused as to why this was going on. And if it weren't for my fans letting other people know, who didn't know and didn't care, you know, weren't familiar with what was going on, I don't know where I would be. That depression could have really taken me out. I was engaging in behaviors that were very risky. You know what I mean? Yeah. They let me know that I wasn't alone. And if I fought there, they'd be there for me on the other side, that they cared. Mm-hmm. And just sometimes to know that somebody cares makes all the difference.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just want you to know that I also cared deeply. I was like, where is JoJo's music? I didn't even know what was going on. I just didn't know. I knew that you weren't releasing music, and you had covered Marvin's Room on YouTube. And oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah. I mean, I was getting creative in other ways and like not making any money from that, releasing mixtapes, and they were streaming amazingly, but I wasn't able to make a living from it because I didn't own my voice. So we were doing these non-traditional type of things, which at the time wasn't as like commonplace as it is now. Artists covering other people's songs and like doing mixtapes and stuff. But so I was keeping myself engaged with my fans that way, because otherwise I was like, I'm going to die. Like I'm going to do something that is not going to, that will not allow me to continue to live. You know what I'm saying? So I just, but a lot of people thought that I went to college, or that I just decided not to do music, or maybe I had a baby, or maybe I did this or that. People just didn't know. And that's just how it goes. We have a short attention span. I do too.
Right. I'm so grateful that you were able to feel the support and the love of your fans, because of all people, I know what that's like and how impactful it can be when you feel like you are at rock bottom, but you have an army of people who don't personally know you, but support and love you from a distance so much that you feel like you can carry on even though you're at your rock bottom. I know what that's like, and it's so impactful. It's also really incredible that you are still fighting and still churning out music. And, you know, after all they did to help get your story out, you're turning around and giving the music right back to the fans. I think that's really powerful and incredible.
They're what compel and propel me to keep pushing forward when it's difficult, because music is one thing. The business side of it is a complete other thing.
Yes.
And it's almost like an oxymoron. Like, music is so fun and I can't believe that this is our job and it's such a joy and a pleasure. But then the industry, the business, I fucking hate it. Yes. I really am not good at the bullshit or the posturing, the positioning, the like, do you know, that does not come naturally to me. So just the purity of like us loving music and fans loving music and me being a fan of music, you being a fan of music, that's the purity that I live for and I really enjoy. And you said something about rock bottom, and I don't think that I have reached or ever did reach a rock bottom for me. Mm. And I think that can be a dangerous thing as well, because you're like, everything's cool. Everything's fine. Like I haven't, you know, there's still further for me to go. And I don't know if that makes any sense, but I think that was almost like that enabled me for a long time. Mm. Because I didn't hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. There were times where I felt like, oh, well, I hadn't hit rock bottom, so I kept going until I actually did. And I know what you mean, how that can be enabling. Yeah, that is a dangerous thought. You're absolutely right.
I also really liked that people would always come up to me and be like, you know, I never saw you stumble out of a club drunk, or I never saw your pussy on the internet. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, people have literally come up and said wild shit like that to me. And I'm like, it's only by the grace of God that you haven't, because I've been all those places. You know what I'm saying? Right. I've been that mess. It's just that cameras weren't there. Like people weren't checking for me like that. So I'm so grateful that, because all of that shit is true. I've done all those things. And anyway, I just wanted to say that because I do think that there's like a misconception that like, wow, Joe just had it together all this time.
Right.
No, I didn't.
Right. So. Well, you know, you're human. You said that you had fans come up to you and say, I'm so glad I didn't see you stumbling out of a bar or whatever. But what do you think is the coolest thing that you heard from a fan, either during that time of, you know, when you needed motivation to keep fighting or after? What was the coolest thing that you heard from a fan?
Something that comes to mind is a fan telling me that they went to law school to get into like music business law because they were inspired by my situation and coming out on the other side of it. And I just thought that was so cool because they had been a fan for as long as I've been doing this and we grew up together. And I was just like, you're such a boss. This is so amazing. Like I was so inspired. And the fact that they like tagged me in their graduation photo and they talked about how they wrote like, I don't know if their final thesis was that, but isn't that amazing?
I have full body chills. That's so incredible. Wow. And look at, because you told your story and you shared it with people, you know, this girl is able to fight for something that she believes in as well. You helped her find her passion. That's so empowering. That's so cool.
I think that's so cool. I mean, maybe one day she'll represent me. It's so amazing. Yeah.
It's also, I love the story of women supporting other women. That's so needed and so impactful in this industry.
Yeah. I always love that too. It makes me feel great. My manager is a woman. I'm surrounded by incredible, inspiring people. My mom is living with me right now. We're cohabitating and it's just
cute.
Yeah, it's everything.
Wait, not you and I getting our moms together and having a brunch, because I totally
would. Oh, absolutely you and I doing that.
So one thing that I loved about and still do love about your voice is how much soul you have in your voice. And I want to know, where did those influences come from? Like, what did you grow up listening to? And then secondly, I want to ask, you know, was it difficult for you to enter the pop industry because you did have so much soul in your voice? You know, did you find that you had to kind of maybe, I don't know what the word is.
I love your questions. I love where this is going. And this is cool because I want to talk to you singer to singer as well. I think this is an interesting conversation. Okay, so thank you for what you said about soul. Like, that's what I've always been drawn to regardless of genre. I think that authenticity, or that you can feel someone's humanity, their experience in their voice. I really am drawn to singers like that. So I would say that my icons that I really studied and just tried to sing like growing up were Aretha Franklin, Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey, Ella Fitzgerald, Etta James, and even I loved like the grit of Bob Seger, and let's see who else, Joni Mitchell. I really loved her range and her songwriting, James Taylor. So that's more on a smoother side and more like storytelling and folk. And then as I got a little bit older, I really admired singers like Jill Scott and Erykah Badu and India Arie and D'Angelo. And I love music. I could literally talk about it all my entire life and just nothing else. And awesome. Then, so I did not see myself as a pop singer, especially when I was younger. And it's weird to talk about genre or to like confine yourself to a genre anyway, but then it was just put on me after I had such big success with my first single, Leave Get Out. And when I cut that song, I was like, yeah, this is a catchy song, but I'm not a pop singer. So I didn't really even think that it would make sense in my album. Because if you listen to the rest of my first album, it's pretty R&B.
Right.
And so I felt like Leave Get Out stood alone. I felt like I needed to exist within a box. I'm not saying it's like a bad box, but I know that I softened some of my edges. I lessened some of my intensity, especially over the years, especially as like times changed. And I was told time and time again that like, you know, can you sing softer, or can you try this or that? That really impacted me. Also, when you have such success so young, of course, you're just going to be more vulnerable to people's opinions. Mm-hmm. And I definitely sang differently when I was just having fun and there was no expectation. Then when expectation and money came into play, it did change things.
I also noticed like a period of time when I was singing, I always, if you looked up videos of like I loved singing to Kelly Clarkson too. Like her Thankful album was so soulful. And I remember like there's videos of me at like 12 and 13, like singing to that song, the Trouble with Love. And then if you were to fast forward to me at 15, 16, recording my second album, I remember I took off some of the vibrato on like when holding out some of the notes and just held them out straight. Because I thought that it would sound cleaner, and it
sounded cleaner on a record. And and maybe you thought, okay, maybe I'll do that live. But like, you know, and especially if different effects are being used on your vocal, you know that when there's a certain effect, that the vibrato is not gonna, it's not gonna sound complimentary. It's just gonna get in the way. But it's like, hold on, my humanity is getting in the way of the song. Like, huh?
Yeah.
It's actually really strange. And I don't know if you relate to this, but sometimes if I haven't actually gone back and watched videos in a while of me even before, you know, at like 10, 11 years old, because it makes me sad. It makes me sad to see the innocence that I've lost, or the connectedness. I had no self, I was not self-conscious at all. And, and to see that, to see little Joanna like that, it makes me sad, but I know she's still in there.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's still there.
Yeah. Yeah. I found that if anything, when I go back to play those videos, I'm like, look at how much soul I used to have at that age.
I mean, you know, you still do though, right? But it's just like amazing to see, wow, like you've always been, it's always been there. It's
right.
The truth.
Yeah. I kind of always, if I play those videos for some of my friends that like love music and didn't see those videos of me, I pull it out and I'm like, this is the singer I've always been, you know?
Yes.
And it's cool to be able to go back to those moments and be like, that was still in me at that age. And it's always been there. You talk specifically about softening some of your edges in your music. Do you feel like you had to soften some of the edges in your life too? Like did how people put their opinions on you and your career, did that affect your personal life as well?
I'm really a sensitive person and I do take things in, and that's why I have to now be very discriminate as to whose energy I take in and who I listen to. But yeah, it just made me doubt, and I'm thinking about why I've never been public in a relationship. It's because of the fear of people's opinions and wanting to keep that sacred and not wanting to allow this like this new thing or this old thing or whatever it is, just wanting to keep that as much to me as possible. But it's also because, I don't know if I'm getting off topic here, but I was my first relationship when I was 13, 14 years old. He was a professional soccer player, just a couple years older. And we went on a red carpet together. And we were really, the comments were so judgmental and negative and focused on the interracial nature of our relationship. And this was 15 years ago. It was a different climate.
Mm-hmm.
But that did leave, that made me really want to protect and to make sure that never happened again to whoever I was with. I don't know if that makes sense, but it made me hyper-vigilant. And even when I was told from different people, like, you know, since you're a white woman this is the truth. I am a guest in the culture, in R&B culture, in black music. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
This is a tradition that I'm a part of, but it's not mine. And they're like, you know, you got to really walk at this careful line. You shouldn't talk about race. You shouldn't talk about, you know, social justice and things like that, when 2020 happened, that no longer was, that was unacceptable to me. And I didn't care about any advice that I had retained over the years. It was just, I can't live for other people and I can't be silent on things that matter to me. And yeah, that's what I want to say about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, last year we were all faced with a decision, and it was to either continue to, you know, listen to those people who said, keep your opinions to yourself, or it was to stand up for what is right. And
I think
it's
a choice between fear and love.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, absolutely. I just think that it's so, I'm proud of, you know, everyone who did choose love instead of fear, because that's what it's about. So after years of not touring, you finally started to tour again, and then the pandemic canceled. Like, what?
We're just getting in a groove.
Horrible timing. What did you think about that?
I turned my thoughts from, oh my God, to, oh my God, everybody else. You know what I mean?
Because
everybody was affected by this. So I was like, okay, I guess this is the time for me to make a Christmas album. I guess this is the time for me to, you know, write more and to, and to expand in ways that I don't when I'm on the road. Like, I really got into plant-based cooking and to, like, having fun in the kitchen, baking, trying out new things, exploring other sensual joys that I have, because I think that I really love taste, smell, sound, all these things. So I explored that more in a home way. And, but it definitely, it made me freak out a little bit. I'm like, can I still sing? Can I still sing live? Can I still perform?
Right.
Like, what, you know, how does it feel to have the in-ear monitors in, which, by the way, I don't like wearing in-ears. I always have one out. There's always a problem with it. I'm just like, I can't get used
to
it.
That's true.
So doing the show, The Masked Singer, that I did earlier this year kind of gave me a confidence back of performing, because I hadn't been in front of people for a little while. Like, it's kind of, I feel like if you don't lose it, if you don't use it, you lose it. It's not always true, but it's like riding a bike. I had to get back in practice.
Yeah. How long had it been since you had performed?
I had been doing virtual things, as a lot of us had, like from the crib or, you know, in a studio. But as far as being on a stage, it had been a year and a half, probably.
Yeah.
And it takes me just a few months to be like, oh, I suck now. So I just have to do it like all the time.
Me too. I'm so hard on myself, but I've also found that a part of my perfectionism is what makes me feel so great about completing my projects. You know, I can, I feel good. I've learned to, like, not just, you know, shame my perfectionism, but also, like, to understand the gifts that come from some of my shortcomings. And some of the gifts that come from my perfectionism are the fact that I can listen to a project years later and be like, you know what? When I turned that in, I felt really good about it because I spent hours listening to it.
Yes, and I obsessed and I went back and I re-recorded things and I, you know, that attention to detail, that's great, because then you can, you won't feel regretful for the time that you didn't take.
Yes.
On that.
Yes, absolutely.
So I feel you on that.
What are you listening to these days?
I am loving Lucky Day's album, Table for Two.
So good.
I'm obsessed with Yeba. She might be my favorite vocalist.
So good.
Yeah. Woo! I was just listening to October Sky, absolutely losing my shit in the car.
So good.
I just appreciate her freedom and her freedom of her vulnerability, her acrobat. I appreciate everything about her as a vocalist. So I love Lucky's project and all the duets on there. I love Jasmine Sullivan's project.
Yes.
Her and Yeba are probably my two favorite singers right now. And what else have I been listening to? I'm constantly listening to jazz. I'm a bit of a old lady in an elevator when it comes
cool.
to jazz. Like, I went, like, if you get in my car, you'll be like, Joe, why are you listening to this? But I'm, like, listening to, like, vibraphone, like somebody.
Oh my gosh, that's so dope.
It calms me. I like to listen to all different types of jazz, whether it's like a new movement of jazz with like Robert Glasper and Thundercat and Kamasi Washington, or older stuff like John Coltrane, Miles Davis, or wow, Latin jazz, or I really, really love just the musical bed of it. So sometimes not listening to singers. As much as I love listening to singers, yeah, I also really love just instrumentation.
Absolutely.
So I would say that's what I'm listening to. Also, J. Cole's new project. I'm always listening to Kendrick Lamar and mm-hmm. D'Angelo. And yeah, what about you?
Sinead Harnett.
Yes, her project. That's my girl.
It's
Ready
so
is always
good.
Too late. Oh, I'm so happy you said that. She is great.
Yeah, I've been listening to that. It's so good.
Demi, you do such an amazing job of uplifting and celebrating talent from all genres, from all walks, and that are, you know, whether they're new. I really want to celebrate you for that. You always bring attention and use your platform to uplift other artists. I personally appreciate that, how you do it for me and how you do it for others. I think it's amazing.
Absolutely. Music is the greatest gift to humanity.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Every time I have a guest on my show, I ask them, what does 4D look like to you? And the way that I describe it is 4D to me, it's just about the state of being your most authentic self. And it's having these conversations that are going to raise our frequency or elevate us into the next dimension. So what does 4D look like to you?
Ooh, what a cool question. And I feel like nothing's off limits here, so I'm just going to feel free to say it. When I think of what that is, it's been my experience with psilocybin. I feel as though it's not something that you need to do all the time. It might not be for everyone, but I think that my experience with microdosing or even having a full experience with psychedelic mushrooms mm-hmm. allowed me to detach from my ego, mm-hmm. stop ruminating, and actually see the interconnectedness of all living things. So I'm sitting in my living room right now and I'm looking out the window and I'm able to perceive the trees as I perceived them when I had that, you know, when I saw things in 4D or 5D or whatever, all my senses were, there was no fear. There was only love, connectedness. I feel like that's the truth. And I feel like the world and society and different things get in the way of that. And sometimes there can be a little gateway, an assistant. And for me, it was that to remembering that truth before all the shit came in and, you know, got in the way of that. So that's my long-winded answer.
Oh, that's beautiful. I'm so happy you were able to have such a positive and loving experience.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible. I love that answer. I love you. And I love
you too.
All of your music. And I'm so grateful that you came on here today. And thank you. We got to hang out soon.
Demi, thank you so much for asking me to do this. I love the conversations you're having, just uncovering important topics. And I have nothing but love for you. And I hope to see you soon.
Yes, absolutely.
When you laugh, you're in your whistle register.
I know,
it's amazing.
I know.
I'm like, this bitch is like, it is so ill. I'm so impressed.
I'm still trying to figure out how to sing it.
How to have control of it. Me too.
Yes, I don't know how to have control of it. I can hit it in my laughs, but yeah. I can't do it in a song.
I don't believe that though. Well, I feel like maybe you can help me with belting and we can figure out our whistle together. Because I want to have that supportive belt.
I got you, but you need no help.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, I love you, babe.
Love you. I'll see you later. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye.